The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Sports Talk 1240 is brought to you by DraftPot.com. DraftPot is changing fantasy sports. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with promo code SportsTalk1240 and receive a 100% deposit bonus up to $1,500. And now, Sports Talk 1240.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome to Sports Talk 1240 on this Sunday, November 15th, 2015, broadcasting from the West Babylon studios of WGBB 1240 AM. I'm your host, Gary Harding, and of course, John Panarese, my tag team partner, is always here. Thank you to Brian Graves on the other side of the glass. We are going to have a busy first hour of Sports Talk 1240 tonight. At about 8:10, we're going to have Shannon Hogan, the pre- and post-game voice of the New York Islanders, come on and talk about the recent West Coast trip and how the team is doing. And in the second half of the hour, my sponsor, my show sponsor, Dr. Stephen Brook from Country Foot Care in Mineola and East Williston, a probably one of the most passionate Met fans I know, is going to be joining us to talk a little hot stove.
If he's not eating his hot dog, though.
Yeah, if he's not eating his hot dog, yeah. Hopefully, John. John, how you doing, buddy?
All right, how are you?
All right. I turned another year older yesterday. So,
that's right.
Yeah, so pretty interesting, quiet day. No hockey for the weekend, which was pretty interesting to not have.
Very strange. The Islanders didn't have any games on Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah,
I'm not used to that.
Yeah, and definitely not used to it. I mean, the back-to-back on Thursday and Friday was interesting, and we'll definitely check in with Shannon on that. I mean, you know, things were interesting, and of course, as we got into the studio and got our headsets settled in, we didn't really see anything yet, but we heard from Halftime Howie, who finished off basically talking about a very controversial play to end the giant New England Patriot game. Why does controversy follow that team from Boston? I mean, what is it with these guys? If you could tell us anything about this, and if you're on Twitter, do at GHardingWGBB or at HockeyBlindside. And let us know what happened, because we unfortunately don't have any monitors here. Didn't get a chance to see it, and it would be pretty interesting. But, John, I'm going to just bring this up real quick before we get Shannon on, because I got to make a comment about this. And for those of you who don't know John, John is has lost his eyesight. How old were you when you fully lost your sight?
10 months old.
Right. And so it's pretty much his entire life. And I think maybe he's probably one of the few people in the tri-state area that were probably happy that he didn't have to witness seeing the Jet-Buffalo game on Thursday night and seeing those lovely uniforms. I know his brother Joe's here in the studio, and he's shaking his head. It definitely looked like Christmas. And, of course, you know, I mean, you read the story.
Yeah.
Anybody who is a red-green colorblind person, which supposedly is 8% of all males in the United States, had trouble watching that game. And I mean, I don't think the Jets, it was that bad, because we're all used to to gangrene. We're all used to the green of a Jet uniform. Yeah, they wear the white pants. So, I mean, the green wasn't so bad. But those Buffalo red jerseys were disgusting. Oh, John, you got to be happy. Share your lucky stars that you didn't have to look at that. I mean, it was disgusting. Even my wife commented.
I read quite a bit about it after the game.
But obviously a difficult loss for them to swallow, a tough loss for the Giants. But looking so far here, pretty interesting things that happened this week in the NFL. Obviously, who would have thought the Carolina Panthers would be 9-0? And they're winning convincingly. It's not like they're squeaking games out. They're playing well all facets of the game, which is a great sign for that team, because no one expected them to be at this point where they are. Obviously, the Cincinnati Bengals are playing the late game tonight, and they're 8-0. Denver just suffered a bad loss tonight. It's pretty interesting. I mean, again, who would have thought we're looking at the Central Division of the NFC and say the Minnesota Vikings are winning?
Yeah.
They're 7-2. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, is Adrian Peterson the main reason why that team is 7-2? I mean, you really wonder.
You wonder, because, him not being there last season, they were horrible.
And to me, I mean, it's not that Teddy Bridgewater is a bad quarterback, but it's just, you just don't expect a lot of great things from him. You don't expect him to step up the way he's been. I mean, you look at Carolina and you look at their quarterback there, and you know he's had, you know, a former number one pick, and he's, you know, he's been capable of doing some good things. So, you know, you could expect that, but
yeah,
no one expects anything.
Stewart's playing, you know, running back wise, you know, mm-hmm. running wise for Carolina's doing well, Jonathan Stewart. So
right, exactly.
I only know that because he's on one of
he's on one of your fantasy. I was just going to say
he's been carrying me at times. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so again, as we wait for Shannon to come on, we just get again look at the NHL standings right now. Again, the Rangers right now are playing at MSG against the Toronto Maple Leafs. They had the shootout win last night against the Ottawa Senators. Yes, the afternoon, I should say. 13-2-2 right now. Toronto is up 1-0 on the Rangers in the start of the second period. You know, you got to admit, you know, the Rangers are, you know, and they're finding ways to beat you in every facet. It's not the same one or two or three guys that are beating them. They're getting contributions from all four lines, all 60, and of course both goaltenders. You know, I mean, we don't know about Henrik Rantanen having a great start. And again, another surprise. You know, looking, you knew Washington was going to be up near the top of the standings. Did you really think New Jersey was going to be where they were?
I'm starting to wonder. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say I'm a believer, but catching the game against Pittsburgh last night, they really made Pittsburgh look bad.
Yeah, very sad to say. But we do have our guest on the line. You know this young lady from the pregame shows and the postgame shows on the MSG Plus Network. She's Shannon Hogan. Shannon, it's John and Gary at WGBB. Thank you for coming on, and good evening.
Hi, guys. Good evening. How are you today?
Good. Shannon, I want to start off our interview in a similar way to one of your compatriots at the MSG Network. I'm going to bring up a song, a.k.a. Stan Fischler.
From 1950?
No. Shannon, I'm not that old. Come on. But no, I will bring
them up at like 1929. I'm like, yeah, I don't even know that song.
Exactly. No, but I'll bring something a little closer to our age. We're a little older than you, Shannon, but I think you may know the song. But it's an old famous song by Meatloaf, Two Out of Three Ain't Bad.
Hey, I think on a West Coast trip, that definitely has to be the theme, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
I can't tell you the date. I can't tell you the year of that song, though, you guys.
It was 1979, but that's okay.
Was it really?
Yeah, I was 16. I know I was 16 at the time. Yeah.
Wow.
I was not born yet, but I know.
Oh, that just made me feel bad.
Yeah.
She's not born yet. Thanks.
I'm sorry. Butch makes fun of me all the time.
90 seconds into the show, and she's made our night.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm sorry.
That's okay. You got to be, I mean, as a fan, you have to be real happy of the way they came out on Friday night after the tough loss in L.A. You just wondered whether the effect of a hard luck loss to the Kings would take them on, but they really, especially in the third period, the Franz Nielsen show came on and it just seemed to reinvigorate the guys.
Absolutely, and when you look at kind of the first month of the season and the games that they played well, and we kind of started feeling like we were a broken record saying that they needed that secondary scoring. You know, you go from a stretch where things are going well after, the first couple of games against Chicago, then Tavares is out, it's a little jumbled, then they're trying to get back on track, and you need more than one line to score. So when you see that Franz Nielsen, line start scoring, and really I think Butch and Howie hit the nail on the head that was one of the best games Anders Lee has played all year, if not the best.
Totally agree.
I mean, he looked really strong. And they looked like they knew where they were supposed to be, and they knew where their line mates were going to meet to make the plays that they needed to make and put the game away. And I think it was a huge confidence boost and the perfect way to end the road trip.
And Brock Nelson certainly stepped up over the last couple of games. And, no surprise playing with JT, but, he's looked like a different player over the last couple of games. And there was, a lot of criticism that I was reading about that he was a little quiet, scoring wise, and now he's I don't know, is it 5 points, 4 or 5 points on that three game stretch?
And he scored the first goal in the last two games.
Yeah, I think to me it was almost more impressive that it was in both games. It was the first Islanders goal of the game. I think that once you can get that going early on, that kind of can set the tone. And when you interview Brock, if you've ever met him or, fans come in contact with him, he's very soft-spoken. Like, he's
extremely
not a rah-rah, outgoing, kind of personality, especially with the media. And I really do feel like playing on that top line with two very poised players, with Tavares and Oposo, is just, I think he's just trying to soak it in right now. And at the same time, while you're still learning and trying to help create offense for those guys as well, you know, it's kind of hard to not be successful when you're playing with John Tavares. Like,
right.
If you're doing what you need to do and he's doing what he needs to do, like, good things are going to happen if you have the skill that Brock Nelson has.
I just stand in front of the net with my stick down and just let John, you know, Johnny just do the passing and just tapping them.
I will just stand here.
Well, speaking of opportunities and things, obviously, you know, in the Anaheim game, it was, you know, I was actually driving home from work and heard the play of Chris King on the 5-on-3, and it was just, it seemed like Anton Khudobin was in another world with these guys, save after save, moving and moving. You know, any other goaltender, they would have had found a way to beat him, and Khudobin stood up to the ground. Is that type of a situation, especially when the Islanders' power play has not been successful as of late? I mean, does it really get on the guys that they just sometimes can't solve a goaltender like Khudobin in a 5-on-3 situation like that?
I think it can be really tough, especially when you come off another game or you had a 5-on-3 opportunity that you didn't convert on. And I think Jack Capuano kind of hit the nail on the head. I can't remember if it was post-game. I think it was post-game in L.A. He said, you can't have a 5-on-3 like that and not score. If you don't score, a lot of times you won't win that game. And then, you know, Howie and Butch touched on it again when we were down in Anaheim. When you can't convert on the 5-on-3, that has to be, you know, more pressure on the players, because you're thinking, come on, you know, we've got some momentum. We should be able to score here. But I didn't feel after that opportunity, after that period, that they really were as deflated as maybe you would think. And I think because they did have good opportunities, which I think I was Wojciech that I talked to in that intermission, they were getting the shots off. They were creating opportunities. And you know what? You're going to run into goaltenders like that. And it might not be for the whole game. It might be for a 5-on-3 opportunity. It might be for a period. But he was fantastic. And I think just the fact that I think they won't dwell on that because they were doing the right things and they won the game. I think if they hadn't won the game, it would have been another situation in which they were kind of frustrated able to score on that opportunity.
And it was good because they played well enough to beat the Kings. You know, I didn't get to catch most of the game, but reading some articles about it and talking to some people who were up watching it. And, you know, by rights, I mean, I think they had three posts or two posts and a crossbar in the third period. And, you know,
yeah,
so
it was just the puck luck. It was
right, that's the word that's being used all over the place is the puck luck.
But you know what, though? You sometimes have to create your own luck. And,
yeah.
And while you can skate in different venues and, you know, the ice can be not what you want, or you could have a couple bad bounces. I can't even remember. The games start to run together after a while, but I think it was not too long ago where the puck went off the boards and hit the linesman. And it's like, that would never, Cal Clutterbuck was all like, I cannot believe that they just scored like that. But those things are going to happen throughout a season for every team. It just kind of felt like it was one after another, I think, for the Islanders for the last couple of games.
Covering the guys this year, and again, something I've seen, which really surprised me, and I knew this young guy was a decent goaltender, but I mean, are you as surprised as everybody else on how fantastic Thomas Greiss has been for this club?
I think, like a lot of the Islanders fans and the club and the organization, you were hoping for just a good backup. You know, you were hoping for a guy that might be able to go in and, you know, play on the back-to-back situation and give the team a chance to win. But he really has been very strong and like, just seems comfortable. And it's been from game one. The communication's been good with the guys in front of him as well. And I just think the Islanders are lucky that they really do feel like they have two goaltenders that they can comfortably put in net against whoever they're playing and be confident about it. And J.F. Berube is another guy that I think that they actually feel like they have a, you know, backup potential in. He hasn't had the opportunity to get in there as much as Thomas Greiss has. But I think that they're confident in his development as well as a, you know, a young netminder. But you know, I think especially with Halak not being 100% to start the season, it's been very important to have Greiss where he is and how he's been performing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's, you know, that was the big issue from last season, you know, obviously finding somebody who was going to be a steady backup.
Yeah.
But, you know,
you have to go into those situations and as a coach and a team and actually think you have a chance to win. It can't be like, oh, I don't know, should we put Halak back in again because, I don't know, it's really important, I think.
Right, having confidence in the guy you're going to be putting out there to stop the puck.
Yeah, and I definitely sense that. From
and especially if you give him a little bit less games to deal with in October and November, you hope that's going to turn into being a little fresher come late April, early May, and so on
right
down the road.
Yeah.
If you
haven't seen, I will say about Greiss too. If you know, his interviews are short because that's kind of his personality is short, but he is like the happiest go lucky German guy. Like just smiling all the time. How's it going? Good morning. Like just, he is such a delightful personality that I hope the fans get to see that as the season.
Could he be a younger,
you know, kind of goes on.
Could he be a younger version of Nabokov maybe?
You know what? Kind of like, different personalities, but yeah, like friendly.
That's where I was getting at.
He's not as eloquent as Nabokov is, and I know the fans really loved when he would do the interviews with Stan. I think Thomas Greiss is more. He doesn't want to talk about himself. It's very team oriented. Very, you know, the guys were great in front of me tonight, but just like his overall demeanor, it's just like a happy-go-lucky, like, here we are, so happy to be in the game today. Oh, we won, that's good. He just has really like a happy, fun aura about him.
Now, just, it's funny because I was reading a couple of things over, because like I said, I didn't really catch, they were late games, you know, obviously. One of the comments that I've read in, you know, a lot of places has been about the fact that, you know, the lines. Do you think that Jack is actually going to stick with lines, you know, steady lines for more than a period or two? He's been, from what I've read, he's been using the Quinville, blender approach to lines over the last few games.
Well, I think Jack has addressed that a few times. You know, if things aren't going well, you have to do something. You have to make some kind of change. As far as whether that will stick for the, you know, the upcoming homestand, I don't know. But it definitely, I thought the first and the second line, he's not changing the fourth line.
That's been pretty much in stone.
I will be more interested to actually see what he does with the D pairing because he split Boychuk and Letty, who really have been together since they both joined the team last year. He split them, and Boychuk did have, you know, some offensive success on this road trip. And Letty really looked like he was trying to step up on the plays more. So I'll be interested to see if that, you know, if those changes he made stick, or if that was just something, all right, let's see what we got, and then put guys back together. But I think more than the juggling of the lines, I'll be interested to see tomorrow, and then when they play Montreal on Friday, if they will keep the D pairings the same as they were for the last couple of games.
Speaking of D, I just want to get your thoughts on, and I got to see him a little bit in Bridgeport last year. Ann Pellick made his debut the other night. Very nice young kid. I think he's got a lot of upside to him. I'm actually judging by the numbers, I know his plus minus, I think, was the biggest reason why he got the call up, because I think he's like plus 10 or 11 or whatever in Bridgeport. I mean, they're doing ridiculously well to start the season, but your thoughts on how he played on Friday night and how he stepped into the fire, if you will.
Well, if there aren't any glaring mistakes and you don't hear about
that's true,
exactly.
That's very true.
A billion times, like as a rookie, that's what you want to do in your debut. As a defenseman, you just want to get in there and get through the game, and if they win, that is a total bonus. After the game, I felt like there was this huge sigh of relief on his face, like he had been waiting the whole road trip, you know, am I going to play? Am I in? Am I not? You know, and they kind of, I think they told him the night before, you're going to play in Anaheim.
Yeah, they sent him a text, right? Some along those
lines,
yeah.
And it's just one of those things where, like, you know, when you're called up and in an emergency situation, if somebody's injured or, you know, something goes on, that you might have a chance to play. But when you're out on the road for a week and you're used to playing in the AHL every other night or whatever, there has to be this, like, just overwhelming, like, okay, are we going to is it tonight? Is it tomorrow night? Am I going to play? When we get back, if I don't play, are they going to send me back? And so I think he was just relieved to get that out of the way. And, you know, the coaching staff, from what I could tell, talking with Capuano after the game, were pleased with, you know, what they saw. I think they tried not to throw him into the Wolves too much. I think, you know, managing his minutes a little bit out there. But he said he just tried to focus on it being a regular AHL game. I think there was one situation in which the speed of the game, I think Howie and Butch were talking about it, I think that the speed of the game was a little quicker than, you know, than he was playing, or, you know, he was up on the play. And I think that when it comes to those kind of situations, that's the one thing that you consistently hear those guys coming up from the AHL say, it's so much faster. It's just the pace of the game is much faster. So I think that, you know, for his first game, so far, so good. I don't know if he'll be back in the lineup tomorrow or what they'll end up doing. If the Zielinski thing was, you know, let's just give a guy in a back-to-back, let's give him a night off, or if that's a permanent change that Jack would like to make. But well, I guess we'll find out tomorrow morning.
That's exactly.
That's exactly it. And
actually, I'll just take over. Obviously, you know, they got a couple of important games. I mean, John and I were talking before we got you on. You know, there's been some interesting surprise numbers coming up. You know, obviously we talked about Jersey, how a great start they had. No one expected them to be where they are. Their opponents tomorrow night, the Arizona Coyotes, you know, with all the problems they've had with their arena situation and their ownership situation and all this stuff, they've got a couple of young kids. Obviously, Ty Domi's kid, Max Domi's. There's a great story about him on ESPN, and didn't even know he was a diabetic kid playing in the NHL as well. But I mean, they've had such a great start. Anything you've heard on the surprise story that is the Arizona Coyotes so far this year?
You know what? I'll be interested to see how the game goes tomorrow, especially since the Islanders are now back home. And they had a couple days. You know, when you're coming from the West Coast to the East Coast and back and forth, it takes your body a while to adjust. A team like Arizona, they're used to that because they're flying. You know, their travel schedule is very different from what the Islanders, you know, have going on with all the teams that are so close here in the Northeast. So I definitely think they're two young rookie guys that are going to be, you know, Domi. Their numbers have been fantastic to start the season. So I definitely think that those are guys that the Islanders are aware of, and the team is obviously, they look at tape all the time, so they're going to be ready for that. But I'm just excited to see the Islanders back at home, and it would be good for them to develop kind of, you know, a winning trend at home in Brooklyn. You know, they've got a couple of days off this week to practice after this game, and then they're going to play Montreal again.
Friday and Sunday,
right? They're going to basically be done with that Montreal season series this coming weekend. And so I really think that it'll be good for them to get some practice time this week. And, you know, another opportunity to pick up a win tomorrow against Arizona. But I think, like years past where some teams would say, oh, Arizona, you know, this is one we should win, I don't think that they're looking at it as this is one we should win.
No,
I think this is one that they're going to have to work for.
Right.
So, we're going to let you go in a second. But we couldn't be remiss without asking just a little bit about your thoughts of the change in venue and how your day-to-day activity changed from going to Uniondale as opposed to going to Brooklyn. How you taking in the transition?
I'm the least of the team's worries, but, you know.
Well, no, I mean, just on a personal sake.
But for me, actually, you know what, it's been nice. I moved into New York City, so I'm in the city now.
Oh, okay, good.
I've always wanted, you know, all my friends that moved right out of college into the city, and I was floating around in other smaller television markets and then home in Detroit. And so last year I lived out on Long Island, loved it, met some amazing people, and really felt like I was a part of that Long Island community that supports the Islanders so heavily. And this year, you know, with the team going to Brooklyn, I decided to move into the city. So it's great. I'm a quick subway ride right across. I take the 2-3, get right to Barclays. That's been awesome. And if you haven't been out to a game, the building itself is beautiful. And if you're a journalist covering the team, the new dressing room for the team is great.
Yes.
A lot more space to work around in there to get the interviews done and not feel like you're infringing on someone's personal space. The convenience wise to get there from other different places is noticeable. And hey, you know, no, we're not going to pretend like it's not a trip for people from Long Island that have been supporting the team for, you know, the last four decades. It is a trip, but it's manageable. You can do it with the train. I've had friends that have done it. And I think on the TV side, it's been exciting because we have that whole new brand new set that's right with the ice behind us. So I've enjoyed it because I feel like I'm just like pregame. They're on the ice for skate. I am there. Like the energy in the building is around me. Whereas the Coliseum, you know, we're kind of tucked away downstairs below mm-hmm. the concourse, which is still awesome. But it's been fun. I think it looks great on TV. I think the players have kind of embraced it. For the fans, if you're not racing to catch a train home, come over to the set for postgame because we're doing the same thing as we did last year. If the team wins, we usually have a player that comes up to the set, and they love it. The players love doing that because it's the interaction that they get, you know, the fans get to show some support. Casey Cizikas, I'm pretty sure, smiled the whole time.
Yeah, it didn't go off his face the entire interview.
No,
that's absolutely right.
Smiles. Like, that's all he does is just smile. And you ask the guys, they like doing those interviews because the fans are out there too. And it's kind of like, you know, post-game interaction to see how excited the fans are. I know I want to call them the student section because most of them are young, but the big, 312 section.
229. They go 329, but yeah, it's 229 here in Brooklyn, yeah.
Yeah, but with the drums and the music and when they win, they come down, they're parading through the concourse. You can hear that everywhere in the arena. Like, the acoustics of that building, if someone sneezes, I am pretty sure Yaroslav Halak can hear you in there. So that's one thing I will say is that when someone scores, it is loud. And people have mentioned to me, they've said, you know, when Boston was in town, it really felt like there were a lot of Bruins fans. And I looked around, and I was like, you know, there were significant fans from Boston. They can't get tickets at TD Garden, so they come down to come
exactly.
Check out a game in Brooklyn. I get it. But it wasn't any more than I feel like we would have had at the Coliseum. I think it's just because when someone scores and then someone cheers, it's loud. It's a loud building.
Yeah, well, that's...
So I don't know if that answered your question.
No, it kind of did. I mean, I know John hasn't been. I mean, you know, I saw you obviously last Sunday and asked you to come on the show, and we appreciate it. And just on a personal note, I'll be down in Tampa the Saturday after Thanksgiving, so I'll make sure I try to catch up with you down in Florida.
Come say hello. It's always fun to go down to Florida, especially when it's like getting to be chillier
here.
Yeah, exactly. I can handle 80 degrees for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I can guarantee
yeah,
that.
Thanks.
I understand. If you're going down to visit mom and dad or you are going down with the kids to Disney or whatever, like, go to a game in Sunrise or pop up to Tampa. You can usually get tickets there,
mm-hmm.
and it's a great opportunity to watch your team play.
I absolutely agree. Well, listen, Shannon, we appreciate you giving us a little bit of time on your night off. I'll see you down in Florida Enjoy the rest of the homestand.
You take care.
Thanks so much, you guys. Have a great Sunday night. Have a good one.
Thanks, Shannon. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, so that was Shannon Hogan from MSG Network covering the Islanders. She's always got a great attitude and personality that it fits to be, you know, to be a pre-post game show host.
Yeah, she's great.
She does a fantastic job. So we're going to take a commercial break right now, and when we come back, we're going to talk to our show sponsor, Dr. Stephen Brook from Country Foot Care of Williston Park and Mineola, who we're going to talk some Mets hot stove. Who'd have thought we'd be talking about Mets in November, huh? But hey, we had a good last couple of weeks. So you've got Gary and John, Sports Talk 1240 WGBB, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Hey, fantasy sports fans, DraftPot has an exclusive offer for Sports Talk 1240 listeners. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SPORTSTALK1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit up to $1,500. That's right. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SPORTSTALK1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit up to $1,500. What are you waiting for? Do it now.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Whether you're a couple enjoying a romantic meal for two, a family wanting to dine in a relaxed and friendly setting, or a larger party wanting to celebrate a special occasion, Miller Place Pastoria always combines a warm welcome with the finest contemporary Italian cuisine and wines, also serving up Long Island's favorite pizza. We're located right on Route 25A in Miller Place. Come visit us today and check us out online at mppastoria.com.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Hey, and we're back with Sports Talk 1240 on this Sunday, November 15th. We're going to have Dr. Stephen Brook from Country Foot Care to talk Mets Hot Stove in a couple minutes. But again, thank you. Thank you again to Shannon Hogan for a great interview. And again, I'm looking forward to saying hi to her down in Florida. I'm just actually, as we're talking here, just checking the score. It is 1-1 at Madison Square Garden. I think Ryan McDonough got the tying goal for the Rangers in the second period. And I saw a Twitter video of Mike Babcock not happy when McDonough scored his goal. So, again, as we said, the Rangers are on fire right now. Winners of 8 in a row, 13-2-2. I mean, you can't knock the team. They're playing on all cylinders, and everything they're doing seems to be right. And to, you know, most Islander fans, that's not whistling a happy tune.
Well, I don't know if that's going to keep going the whole season. I don't know. You know, I'm not saying, you know, before it's my words are taken the wrong way here. I'm not saying that the Rangers are quote unquote a bad team.
No,
I think they're playing better than they really are.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want Derek calling up.
Yeah, exactly.
And going crazy, honestly. You know?
They're a playoff team. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think they're a 13-2
team. Yeah, I mean, and the other team, and the other thing that surprised me is obviously, you know, Carey Price going down with an injury for like 2 or 3 weeks, and Mike Condon standing up and he's going like 6-0-1. He's been tremendous. It's like they haven't lost a beat. You know, they're second in the NHL in goal scoring. Only Dallas has more goals. Again, another big surprise, 14-4.
Wow.
Dallas is just ridiculous. I mean, Antti Niemi is doing well. Jamie Benn hasn't lost a step from his, point scoring lead from last year. Minnesota again, 10-3 start. Dubnyk's playing great again. Nashville right up there, and you know, who would have thought Chicago? I mean, yeah, they started off well with us going 2-0, but they're 9-7-1. They've had some struggles. They've had some struggles in net, trouble scoring goals, with the exception of Patrick Kane. And a couple of very timely overtime game winning goals by Jonathan Toews. They really haven't done much either. And then you look at the Western Division again. Anaheim finally woke up. I mean, they've gone, I think they were 4-0-2 before Friday night's loss. But I mean, Ryan Getzlaf without a goal yet.
Yeah, that's.
That's insane.
They weren't scoring any goals for a while.
No, they only in 17 games they have 29 goals. That is a league low 29 goals. Wow. And this was a team that was always in the top 3 or 4 in scoring every year. You know, Corey Perry, Ryan Getzlaf, Ryan Kessler. You know, they're made to put 4 or 5 goals a night on goaltenders, and they're just not doing it. It's an amazing testament to, to how a season can go. And, you know, I mean, and very surprising that the general manager gave confidence in Bruce Boudreau to keep him on staff, that they're not making any changes. But we're going to change gears now. It's been a couple of weeks post-World Series. You know, John and I are sitting here, of course, still with smiles on our faces from the unexpected season that happened. Our guest on the line, of course, if anybody has listened to our show in the past 2+ years, that they know that Country Foot Care and Mineola and East Williston is a proud sponsor of this portion of Sports Talk 1240. And Dr. Stephen Brook, who runs Country Foot Care and is probably, as I said earlier on the show, probably one of the most passionate Met fans I know, is going to talk hot stove with us. Doc Steve, it's Gary and John. Good evening, sir, and how are you?
Good evening, Gary and John. I'm doing great.
I'm sure you are, because obviously you've been a season ticket holder a long, long time. I remember my first time visiting your office in Mineola years ago. I saw the picture of you at St. Lucie at the Legends camp, you know, catching that ball in the outfield, and learned how much of a passionate Met fan you are. And I know, obviously, you know, we ended up just a little bit short, but this had to be one of the best experiences you've ever had as a fan of this team.
Well, I'm very fortunate, because I actually got to take a big thing off my bucket list. I never thought I'd see the day where I would actually be able to attend every playoff game right from the beginning to the World Series, and I was at every Met home game, so I feel very lucky.
Yeah, I know the patience might have been a little tough on the next morning for you. But
what patience?
You want patience.
That's true anymore.
That's true. You're the boss. That's right. Exactly. You can let that go.
That's why I have young doctors who can actually wake up that early in the morning. And, you know, those games ended very late at night, which was way past my bedtime.
Exactly. But you gotta admit, when we were talking, in the middle of July, when things were going as sad as they were, when you had guys like John Mayberry Jr. as your cleanup hitter, could you have thought in your wildest dreams that not only would Sandy Alderson finally get the, now I won't say the words, but the guts maybe, to make the moves that he had to make and improve the team, but to get them to gel as quickly as they did, and be able to make the amazing strides they did, overtaking Washington and just putting them in their dust?
Well, the key that I thought was the fact that he actually reached a point in his career as GM where he believed that the Mets actually had a chance to make the playoffs. So in years past, they were so far behind by that point in the season that it wasn't realistic that another two or three players would even make a marginal difference in a pennant run. But because the starting pitching was so solid and because their hitting was so unimaginably weak, it was a good sign that the pitching held that long until there was actually some professional hitters, which is exactly what Sandy picked up.
Now, just thinking back to when these trades started to occur, when the Mets got Kelly Johnson and Juan Uribe and Johannes Cespedes, did you envision that these moves would be good enough to get them, A, to make the playoffs, and B, to actually get to the point where they, were in the World Series?
Well, I remember seeing Cespedes at the All-Star game at Citi Field, and I saw him win the home run derby. So I knew that the dimensions of Citi Field, even before they were drawn in this year, were not going to hold him. The 7 weeks that he had about 2 weeks into his tenure here was the most electrifying 7 weeks I've ever seen a player have in a Met uniform. As public and as completely obvious as that was, the fact that they had a Uribe or a Kelly Johnson who could spell their regulars and actually come off the bench and hit a home run or get a hit was huge. But they also had their share of good fortune. There's no way that you can make this type of a run and win by such a margin if you don't have the Nationals doing one of the best swan dives I've ever seen since the Mets took two swan dives in 2007
and
2008.
Yep. Right.
So I was very lucky, and in retrospect, the fact that we actually got 6 weeks of Clippert actually, you know, pitching like a setup man. I mean, we won't talk about the last 6 weeks. But,
no.
When he first got there, it rejuvenated the pen and actually gave us a bridge to Familia, which was critical for the run.
And just the fact that, you know, obviously, you know, once the season, you know, when the season started, you thought that Mejia was going to be there, and then he gets his second offense, and then all of a sudden Familia has to assume the role. And, of course, Familia and Mejia are like bosom buddies in a sense. And, you know, Familia has to come in and step up and be the man. And not only, I mean, for that little blip, obviously in the World Series we're not going to talk about, but for that, other than that little blip right after the All-Star game in July, I mean, this kid was outstanding. I mean, he was – you know, even counting when Benitez was at his peak, you know, in the early 2000s, I'd never seen a closer for the Mets have that much success.
Yeah,
he was unbelievable.
Well, he was more than just a three-out closer too. Many times he was called upon where they were up by a run to close out the eighth as well as pitch the ninth inning, Going way back to the beginning of the year, a 30-minute interval where they lost Blevins and Denard in the same game. I mean, that was nuts. And, you know, there are some players who just aren't lucky. And, you know, anybody can take a ball off their arm and break their arm, I guess, but to fall during rehab and break it again, he's pretty much in a class of his own.
Yeah. only to the Mets, right, Doc Steve?
Yeah.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Now, it's kind of switching gears a little bit now that, from my perspective as a Met fan, you know, I know there are a lot of Met fans out there who are really, you know, I guess heartbroken, disappointed, ticked off that they ended up losing to Kansas City. And I've said to people like my cousin Ralph, if you're listening out there, you know, remember that the Mets were only one of two teams that made it to the World Series. You know, and you got to put that in perspective considering, you know, looking back at where we were in April and June. So from that point of view, I think this season was definitely an overall success. And, you know, are you left with those same feelings of accomplishment?
I really am. You can't be disappointed. If someone had told me in January when pitchers and catchers showed up that the Mets would be playing in the World Series, I would have signed on the dotted line. I wouldn't have cared if they had won or lost. And their playoff run, being able to blow past the two Dodger aces and then sweeping Chicago.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of indelible memorable things. Obviously, Murphy, was
right.
the catalyst in the early rounds, but there's no way to look at the season as anything but a total success, and it gives us room for improvement for next year.
I mean, speaking of that improvement, obviously, you know, we obviously heard on Friday morning that Murphy has the right of refusal on that one-year deal that they offer. You know, I think it's a difficult situation both for him and the club. I mean, he's 30 years old, so he's at that point where I'm sure he wants to get the most money he can get and the most amount of, you know, years to get that security for him. But, you know, I mean, he's always had decent numbers, but obviously, you know, his play in the field, I think, Doc Brooke, when you, I saw that picture of you catching the ball in the outfield. I mean, to me, I think you might be better than Murph sometimes on the field. You know, I mean, it scares me. I mean,
to tell you the truth, I played left field most times, and I had a better chance at fielding a ball at second base than he does. but
I mean,
he had the run of a lifetime. And, I mean, playing through Little League and high school and college, most guys don't even get to dream about seven home runs in six games.
No.
So his timing was good. I'm sure it'll, you know, overall – translate into dollars, but that was my wife going, "Oh, you're talking to."
Hi, Debbie.
It's my girlfriend, but we're talking to Mets, okay, Debbie? So, So, but that said, I think that there's a parallel between Cespedes and Murphy because they're both pretty much in the same age group.
Right.
And I am not upset that they are not heavily pursuing either one of them, to the best of my knowledge. And, you know, Cespedes, again, without that run, if you take him over the body of work at his age, a lot of great people that played for us with long-term contracts, you've got two or three good years at the front end of that contract. Mm-hmm. In those last years,
2 years are really miserable.
Couldn't stay healthy for anything the last 2 years that he played for us. And I like Sandy's youth movement. I think that there are enough gifted players in their farm system to cover the loss of Murphy for sure.
Yep.
Whether or not they decide to actively pursue a Zobrist.
Yeah, that's what we're hearing. Yeah, they are
now,
talking.
You know, he is 35. I mean,
true.
Even though he beat the tar out of us.
I mean, you know, you have a Dilson Herrera who's 21 and he's got a possible upside. But again, as you were saying, you got to be happy with the youth movement. And again, I think I saw Syndergaard's second game as a Met. I saw Michael Conforto's second or third game as a Met. I mean, to me, this Michael Conforto kid has just, I mean, you know, we saw him in Brooklyn last year. This year he's playing in a World Series. And to me, if he stays healthy and everything goes right, he's your number three hitter at least for the next 10 years.
Right.
Well, I think you're totally right on target. He has the Keith Hernandez up the alley power plus,
mm-hmm,
with his swing. And he's been so underrated throughout his minor league career, even though you'd say, oh, how could he be underrated? He went straight from double A. The truth is that he's a really gifted fielder.
Yeah, exactly.
And he might not have Cespedes' cannon arm.
No one does.
And he throws runners out. He throws to the right base.
Yep. He's, again, for a kid his age, and you know, it sounds cliche-ish, but it's really not. He's incredibly intelligent. He knows exactly what he needs to do, and he does it with the aplomb of a 10-year vet.
I think that one other thing, I mean, we do have a Gold Glove center fielder, even though it's not Cespedes.
No, that's true.
You know, healed and healthy, having gone through this year, you know, it's a snub. I don't care if it's Babe Ruth who took your spot. You know, you go from being a regular everyday player, I think he came to camp very much out of shape. Mm-hmm. And if this focused him, as he seemed to be towards the last 6 or 8 weeks of the season, I don't think you're going to miss the defense. In fact, I like him a lot better in center field than Cespedes too. I love Cespedes in left field.
Mm-hmm.
That was great. But now that you've got Michael there, you know, and Granderson is probably, in my estimation, the MVP. I mean, it's neck and neck between him and Jurice. It's very close because both of them really performed way above what I thought they would do. And Granderson especially, I mean, I was on the bandwagon of are we nuts after the first year that he played for us, and I've never seen a transformation like this.
And he definitely came, you know, he came alive at the right times, too.
I think having Long, his coach from the Yankees, come over was definitely
a big help.
And, you know, I got my opportunity in September to actually cover a Met game, which was, again, one of my bucket list items I was able to take off. And just seeing the interaction of him with in the locker room with the guys, and it was the game I covered was the game that they brought all the minor league players of the year and all that stuff in, and he's with like had his arms around each one of the guys talking to him, you know, all these kids that were either from the Dominican League or a low A ball or whatever. He's just infectious on everybody. I mean, I've heard that's always been true when he was with the Yankees and with the Tigers. But, I mean, I just love this guy, as you said, even more. You know, it just, after the first year, it was like, you know, are you kidding me? We're going to have this for the next 3 or 4 years? But you know what? I'll take this past season over three quarters of the guys on this team. That's, to me, that's how impressive he was in my eyes.
Look at the positive effect that a person like Mazzoni was with the Atlanta pitching staff.
Yep.
When you have somebody who is that astute, they ran through a lot more than their three giant Cy Young winners there, and he got the best out of that staff, which, of course, kept us beaten and downtrodden for 17 straight years. Okay, so if Long gives me three good years of batting, I'm in heaven, that's for sure.
Well, now, just kind of switching gears here, looking towards the future. You know, with obviously the winter coming and hot stove, and what kinds of things would you like to, as being a long-term Met fan, what do you think they need to address?
If you had Sandy's pocketbook.
Yes, if you had Sandy.
If I had Sandy in front of me, I would be trying to find, and I think that we might actually have somebody in the minor leagues, although the name escapes me, to fill shortstop for us. I think Flores did an admirable job, if you discount the first 6 weeks where he really didn't understand the position. I think that his new contract should have a box of Kleenex for the next time he cries on the field. But I think that a second baseman with 20 homers and 70 ribbies, where his arm and lack of quickness in the field is much less of a liability. He certainly can cover second base better than Murphy, and his numbers would be pretty comparable. And, you know, to tighten up that infield, I think, would be a top priority for me. And, you know, I'm really glad they didn't go after Tulowitzki for the same reason. He's brittle and old. But I would be focusing on that as my primary. I'm much less concerned with the bench, because you can't possibly go into a season with a weaker bench than we did this year.
That's for sure.
And you've got to leave room for some of the younger players to come up, and you know, their starting staff looks set. Even without Bartolo, I think that they have it's a huge strength. I'd see whether or not there were reasonably priced setup men, because that would certainly take some of the burden off the pitching. And the only plus for Zobrist in my mind is the fact that he could spell David at third base as well.
Right.
He's played five other positions. So.
Yep.
If you had a true utility person like that who was a good fielder, you could live with Flores at shortstop if you had to. I have no idea if he is slated for short, and you know, I'm not sure
if he's playing Tejada, right, if they're playing,
you know,
in the Dominican.
I think that he was an adequate shortstop. With the pitching staff that they've got, they need to tighten the infield up.
Now the last question we'll leave you with, because we're going to be closing up in a couple seconds, is you also have the interesting situation now that you have Zach Wheeler in the wings, hopefully coming back from his TJ surgery in either April or May. So that even gives you another possible cog. I mean, you know, and people still say they still believe that they think that Zach Wheeler might still have probably the best arm of the six of the five. If he comes back healthy.
Stephen Matz, I might have agreed, but I just can't believe how talented Stephen is.
Yeah, and we have to be happy with it. We have to be happy with the one-rounder.
From the right-hand side, I think that this would be the dream staff, although knowing Sandy with all those arms, it would be the perfect time to pick the one, I guess, who would bring the most and bring in a Rock'em Sock'em good fielding shortstop, or how about a backup catcher who can throw? Yep. But that's a discussion for another day.
Exactly. Well, listen, Dr. Brook, we thank you very much for coming again. We push your business every chance we get. Country Foot Care on Willis Avenue, in Mineola, and in Williston Park. 516-741 feet is the phone number. Dr. Brook and his staff are fantastic. I've been going to them for 2 decades. I recommend them highly. We thank you for sponsoring our show, and we thank you for coming on tonight.
It was my pleasure, Gary.
Thank you.
Have a good Thanksgiving, okay?
Okay, bye.
All right, take care. Wow, quick show. We only had an hour this time after last month, so it was a lot of fun. Again, we thank Dr. Brook for coming on. Again, we thank Shannon Hogan for coming on. She was a great guest. So, John, hope you have a good Thanksgiving holiday.
You too. Going down to Florida, you are. I'm jealous.
Yeah, I leave.
I'm going to be in Buffalo before Thanksgiving. I'll be back here for.
Oh, you're going to see your brother.
My brother
Chris. Yeah. Okay. All right. Good. So you'll get snow and I'll have sunshine.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, hey, you were in Hawaii a couple of months ago, so don't even talk to me, pal. Okay.
Okay. All right. You got me there.
Yeah. Exactly. We got you there. Okay. So we are going to be leaving in a second. The second hour of Sports Talk 1240 will be coming on. Again, if you want to reach the show, 631-888-8811 is the number. I'm not sure if Ryan is taking calls in the 9 o'clock hour. But, again, if you want to get us on Twitter, at GHardingWGBB is my handle, and at HockeyBlindside is John's. Again, we're always available on Facebook as well. So please let us know what you think of the show, possible suggestions for hosts. I mean, we'll be back probably just before Christmas. I haven't seen the schedule yet, but
I would assume, yeah.
We'll be looking forward to some interesting hockey coming up next couple weeks. First Islander Ranger game at the Barclays Center on December 2nd. I am glad I am not going to be on one of those trains heading to back home to Long Island from Brooklyn.
We both.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. I've actually been driving into Brooklyn. It's not been that bad. We went to the 5 o'clock game last week, and I actually got home from the game in like 50 minutes. It really wasn't bad. So
probably quicker to drive home than wait.
Yeah, by the time I got home, the train we would have been on was only leaving Jamaica.
So
it wasn't bad. But again, you know, I'll just leave this, you know, on the Barclays Center. It's not the worst arena in the world. Everybody wants it to be, you know,
want it to be the Coliseum, and it's not going to be
exactly
the Coliseum, and it shouldn't be. You know, the Coliseum was special. Let's
leave that.
We miss it, but you know what? That's what makes it.
It's moving on, you know,
right.
and like I said, you know, it's good for the broadcasters. I did cover a game. It wasn't as bad. I wasn't as high as I thought I was going to be, but anyway, John, great show again. I wish you and all the people listening to Sports Talk 1240 a fantastic Thanksgiving.
Same to you.
Holiday. If you are not in the United States, happy Thursday. And we will be coming on for the next hour of Sports Talk 1240, so stay tuned here. This is Gary and John wishing you a great holiday. You're on Sports Talk 1240 WGBB.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.